Welcome to the Scariest Things Podcast, your gateway to the trends and tropes of the horror genre. Episode 17. Hey, favorite shaky cam found footage movies. So I'm your host, Eric Lee. I'm here with
Mike Campbell.
And this week we have a special guest.
The specialist of all, Amy Faust.
One of our contributing authors to the Scariest Things website.
ScariestThings.com, 1T.
1T. So there is something very visceral about found footage movies. And there's a real authenticity that I like about it. But I'm not the expert on this. Amy.
Nor am I.
So we had to bring in a ringer to talk about our...
To hip us.
To the shaky cam movies.
What the kids like. What do the kids watch today?
It's just my favorite genre, hands down, in the horror category.
What is it about? Because I think that there's a real strength to the found footage movie, and then is the authenticity, that it really feels like it's stripped of a lot of things like music and sound effects, oftentimes visual effects, and so it really feels like...
Save for Paranormal, which didn't have music, but it always had...
The sound
that would cue you in.
Yeah, it's like this.
Tell you something is
bad
coming.
Bad shit going down. But I think that when you do introduce small things into the shaky cam genre, I think it has that much more impact. Mm-hmm. There are some real downsides to shaky cam. Like, you have to justify why you're using a handheld camera.
That's the biggest one that I think that movies run into. And the people that watch it, that hate it, that's like one of the biggest complaints.
Yeah, because oftentimes it's the trope of, we're reporters.
Yeah.
And we're
going to get the scoop no matter what.
And that's usually, and then the dates all the way back to the original, the Blair Witch executed that really well. Everyone else has been chasing that same dragon, trying to come up with a different wrinkle on it.
At some point, you got to put down the camera and just run.
Turn the camera off, run. The worst of the genre, where all of a sudden it's like, why are you still running the camera? It doesn't make any sense. Or that it seems like you've changed. They don't explain where the handoffs or the transitions happen.
Well, Blair Witch had two reasons. So you had Heather, who was mm-hmm. really focused on getting the scoop, like you said. Mm-hmm. But it also had her hiding behind the lens as a way to make it feel mm-hmm. unreal, like she's not actually there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a.
But the films that I think get me mm-hmm. are when the trade-off isn't obvious, and when they're. Camera person is holding on to the camera and I'm still duped. I'm sucked in by the story that I don't pay attention to those foibles. And there are some of those.
So I think a lot of it comes down to good editing.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, you can have stuff that would look like totally sloppy editing, like the stop button, and then you start up completely somewhere else and you're trying to figure out what just happened. There's something that happened in the interim, and sometimes you have to, in your mind, stitch those pieces of the puzzle together.
Yeah.
And that can be kind of... It's particularly if it stops and it starts again and there's a corpse on the ground.
Mm-hmm. The worst is when the big bad itself takes control of the camera, which happens a few times. And that is really ridiculously lame, because then you're seeing your protagonist sleeping and, they're not controlling the camera.
Yeah, now that is lame.
Oh, it's
awful. That is totally lame. So
even though we're covering the best of found footage shaky cam films, Amy, what is the worst found footage shaky cam film?
I've had the pleasure of watching a Christian one.
A Christian found
called
footage.
Called The Lock-In. That's pretty bad.
And so it's a Jesus-loving Loch Ness monster?
It's actually even better than that, believe it or not. It's some Christians in a lock-in that find a porno magazine.
Wow.
And the porno magazine is demonic, obviously.
Why wouldn't it
As
be?
All porno is. Right?
Why wouldn't it be?
So, yeah, they're running for their lives against a demonic presence that originated from a corn mag. So it's really bad. How could that
possibly go wrong?
Blair Witch Project, what have you wrought? What
have you wrought? So I think... In honor of...
shaky cam footage. Found footage.
Found footage. Going to let... Ladies first. Let Amy go out with her first of her films.
All right, we already talked about it, so I'll throw it out there. Blair Witch.
All right,
you got to.
The granddaddy that started it all.
Yes.
Now, while technically it wasn't the first found footage movie.
What was? Do you know what was?
There was one called, oh goodness.
You can IMDb it while it's one of our turns, and you can find it. Let us know.
It came out roughly at the same time as another one, but it was a little bit later.
So I think one of the things that becomes clear is that the found footage horror movie is a recent phenomena in
Blair Witch was 1999,
correct? Yeah.
And so that's the one. So that cracked the egg open, and everything else came subsequent to that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think you're not going to go back to like that great 1955 classic
found footage film.
No, because I think you needed the I mean, you could have done it actually in the mid-80s. You still had the VHS tapes.
Right. Well, and in fact, Paranormal Activity, part two, really draws on the VHS technology.
Part three. Because that part two was continuation of the story. Part three was the flashback.
That was the flashback.
And then three was webcam. Wasn't three webcam?
No, four.
Oh, that was four.
Yeah, that's. I think they had the Xboxy thing with the
with the lights. That was pretty cool.
So,
not your genre.
Amy, what was it about Blair Witch that really why would you even put it? Because I know there are Blair Witch naysayers out there. There's
few,
and there's certainly Blair Witch 2 and 3 naysayers out there.
Yeah.
I understand.
I would love to talk about why there are naysayers to the Blair Witch Project. Do either of you hate the Blair Witch?
No, I love the Blair Witch.
No, I thought it was really good.
Okay,
it was good. I really liked
it. We saw it together, and it was like,
yeah.
Because if you ask anybody that hates the Blair Witch, and you ask them, spoilers are okay, right?
Oh yeah.
If you ask them why Josh is facing the corner at the end, uh-huh, they won't be able to tell you, and that's why the movie's not scary for them.
Right.
Because they just think the entire thing was random. They're not making that connection that it goes full circle to what was being talked about with Rustin Parr in the beginning.
Right.
Well, I think there are some actually
interesting, because I think that end scene with Josh is one of the most terrifying scenes in horror movie history.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. My hands flew to my mouth and I went, that. It was just such a great moment.
It's so shocking, and the camera sits still for a second, and you're left to ponder what is happening. And worse yet, I kept thinking, we're going to see the witch. Like, the first time I saw it, I thought, oh my God, the witch is going to jump out and it's going to grab him. And, like, I think if Blair Witch was done today, that's probably what would have happened.
Well, they would have
grabbed him and, you know, he would have, like, slid down the hallway, you know, screaming for his life or something like that. But,
or it would have the facial contortion with the wide mouth.
Yeah. But the fact that nothing happens is so terrifying.
And I think that it was a masterpiece of doing what you can with your budget. And I think this is going to be a common thread for all the found footage films is that you can do more with less. There's a couple of big budget ones.
Well, not entirely. We might get to one of them. Right. We might get to one of them. But I will say that is what I love about. I mean, the thing I really like about found footage is how earnest it is, and how clever it is, and how cheap it is. And we've talked about like the idea of, instead of making, you know, one $200 million film, you could make 30. Pretty solid found footage movies. Hell, you could probably make 50 solid found footage movies for $200 million,
and you'd probably 10 times that.
You'd probably amount. Make 10 yeah. times yeah. that amount.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you made 50 of them, like 5 would turn out pretty solid.
An interesting tidbit: they actually did have a Blair Witch, but it got cut.
In the original,
in the scene where they're running from the tents, there's a scene where Heather goes, "What the fuck is that?" and she screams it out.
Right.
But the camera didn't quite get what they were supposed to. They had a woman dressed up and hidden kind of among the trees, and it was supposed to kind of blur a shot, but it got messed up and they didn't retake it. So,
that was my biggest complaint with Witch.
Mm-hmm.
The film Witch was that it became too literal at the end, where it was like, ooh, it's witches. I was like fine with Black Phillip being the witch. I was fine with maybe just it was mental illness in the family. It didn't need to be that literal. And that was what was so great about the Blair Witch is it's not super literal.
It lets your brain fill in the gaps. Yes. When you leave the theater, you don't want to get in the car. There's all kinds of weird things go through your head. Yeah, it was just that one was one of the few horror movies that actually sat with me and bothered me the night that I watched it. I mean, it's like I'm a hardened horror movie soul now, and that one stuck with me.
For sure.
Mr. Campbell, what do you got?
I have a film. This is a film I saw this weekend.
Okay.
I'm embarrassed to admit that I hadn't ever watched it, A, and I didn't really know anything about it,
okay.
B.
Okay.
But... And partially it was the title kind of threw me, and every time I would see it pop up, I would think to myself, this looks really stupid and this is really ridiculous. And I was also thrown by the actor, and I thought, this isn't possible that this actor could do something scary. This is the 2014 independent American found footage horror film Creep.
Oh no! You found mine! You ran into me.
Really? You guys liked it?
I loved it.
I did not.
I liked Creep. And
has a sequel now.
Yep.
Well, apparently Creep was set up, Mark Duplass from The League,
right.
Which was kind of what threw me in the whole, because I really liked the television show The League, and it threw me that this character, or that this actor would be involved in a film like the Creep, but... I think the thing I really liked about it was that it was this like constant bait switch.
Mm-hmm.
His performance was really weird and off-putting, but not too weird.
I'd say it was
not too off-putting.
Because my impression was anxiety. Because he was weird. I mean, it starts.
He does actually explain. There's quite a bit of exposition at the end that explains sort of his. I mean, allegedly, because I haven't seen Creep 2, but it allegedly explains his anxiety and explains... It gives you some impetus as to why... Yeah.
Well, I'm talking about my anxiety.
Oh, your anxiety. I'm talking about...
I was like,
Creep's anxiety.
Dude is weird. He's doing his baby bathtub type thing. It's like, I'd stop right now. It's like, or the pancake house thing. It's like, he's filming you. Don't go there. It's like, walk away. And there were moments where I thought it's like, okay, that's it. He's gonna get the axe.
And the bath scene, I mean that's like pretty much the first scene right out the gate.
Yeah, yeah.
And that scene is really it's somewhat prolonged too. And there's at the beginning of that scene, it's like he's disrobing, but he takes forever to disrobe, which was kind of unnerving. And then he gets in the bath, and then he has this sort of faux bath time with his yet to be born son who doesn't really exist.
With a girlfriend or wife who doesn't exist.
A wife who doesn't exist, yeah. I liked it. I thought it was really good. And the whole time I was watching it, I was thinking, okay, super cheap, super engaging. I mean, what did they pay like an editor $5,000 to edit this?
Well, it's a Blumhouse production, so you know it's going to be more than $5 million. It probably was closer to $1 million.
A million had to be a stretch.
Right.
I mean, it really had to be a stretch. I mean, I'm just thinking about like the production and everything. I mean, they didn't use a lot of. It didn't look like they used a lot of lighting for it.
No,
there was no animal wranglers.
But that is par for the course for a found footage film.
Yeah.
Like you're not if you see something that looks like it's a professionally lit film.
But this one in particular, it was largely not entirely. It was kind of like a two act play because the one act takes place in a cabin. And the second act takes place in the apartment building. Yeah. So it wasn't like they were going out and, renting these elaborate sets or, paying, substantial amounts of money to rent somebody's home.
Yeah.
They
rented it on an Airbnb.
Pretty damn simple. Yeah. Pretty damn simple. So what did you think, without spoiling the film, because we don't want to spoil it, what did you think of the end?
Frustrating.
I think it could have ended with the park.
Yeah.
And that would have been fine.
Yeah,
they didn't need to go back and have him review.
That would be they stop it right there. That would have been just like, and roll credits, and that would have been I would have been fine with that. I think what I think of the films in this genre that I mentioned the quick edit and the and yeah. the fill in the blanks kind of a thing. This one really had kept you guessing because there would be stop points and then it would pick up again and you were trying to place what was happening in the interim and you're going, is he dead? No, he's not. Is he hard to tell?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it picks up and then it changes the perspective and that and I thought that was very clever, those little keep you guessing twists.
And you know, the other thing which we really haven't talked about, the found footage genre, the thing that that always captures my attention is if it, once again, if you can kind of place yourself in the film. Yeah. And I somewhat identified, not entirely, but I sort of identified with the camera guy.
Yeah.
And you know, being creeped out, but wanting to do a job, but you know, thinking, okay, well, there's a paycheck at the end of this, so I'm gonna ride it out. And you know, some people are a little weird, and that's okay. And right. I'm just gonna roll with it and hope that his weirdness doesn't get too weird. Yeah. Of course, it does get super weird because he is
a creep.
The
creep.
Because he's super weird.
The yeah. creep. All right. So what do you got for your number?
Well, so
I guess this would be your number two.
This is
straight to number two. That was your, yeah, that was your number one.
That was the last one I was gonna do. So I'm gonna go with. But this is a.
What do you got?
This is a great two. One. This is number two. Paranormal Activity.
Yes.
So you know,
one of the best.
This is one. It is
one of the best.
This is the little engine that could. This is the film that built Blumhouse. It is a masterpiece.
Is that the first like big Blumhouse thing?
It was. Yeah. This was Jason Blum's first production.
Okay.
They did it for under $1 million. It yep. made, I think, $80 million.
Yep.
So the bang for the buck, tremendous. I think the unfortunate thing is I don't think that the actors got a cut of the percentage, so I think they got a flat fee, and so Blum got rich. The actress Katie
Featherston. Yeah, she made it through all four, right?
Yeah, so yeah. she got brought back on, but
she had bits and pieces.
But spoiler alert, Micah don't make it.
Mika. Unfortunately, so that's how they pronounce it.
He was kind of a creep, though.
Yeah,
he was such an asshole. She's like, I do not want a Ouija board in my house. And the next fucking scene, he's got a Ouija board set up. I would kick him to the curb so fast.
And she would say, please put the camera down.
Right, constantly.
Did he ever put the camera down?
No,
he didn't.
So yeah, but I think what this was so well done because it allows, you know, the idea of camera presets,
right,
stationary in the house, security cameras, and it allows a lot of things to happen off scene, which adds to the mystery of it.
Mm-hmm.
The deep rumble,
yep,
like that you were talking about, that sets up, it's like something going down.
Yeah.
Playing, big rumble.
Playing
big,
with time.
That's where it's fun to have the big subwoofer in the house and
right.
get the subwoofer. Go ahead
and get
without,
yourself.
So it's the jump scare without. They don't have to have the shrieking violins and that kind of stuff. But it Pavlovian reaction of you hear that deep rumble and you know that there's something supernatural coming, which I thought was fabulous.
And the stable cameras are good for the people that hate the shaky cam genre because it makes them
the
sick.
Queasy, yeah.
Right.
No, and that, actually, that was another thing that people who complain about Blair Witch say, I can't sit through
right,
it because
exactly.
I get queasy.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I love, too, about the stable cameras is you would see the time.
Yeah,
how they played around with the time where it would revert back,
right,
you know, several hours. It would go forward several hours.
Right.
It would split. That just watching the time monitor on the camera was enough
right.
for a gasp.
And then they could also do the fast forward, which could explain weird stuff happening.
Yeah.
Like Katie standing at the side of the bed,
right,
staring
for a really long
for
time,
a couple of hours, and then just going back to
right.
without any explanation or her remembering it.
Right.
Fantabulous. I think it was the shot out of the cannon. You know, when you thought that maybe the genre was getting a little tired,
mm-hmm.
that injected a lot of life into it, I think.
Yeah.
And so...
do you think Paranormal Activity is the best of the genre?
No, I think Blair Witch is the best of the genre.
No, the best of the paranormal... Sorry,
oh,
not
the paranormal
not the genre, but the best of the paranormal canon.
I actually really liked the masked ones, which was everyone hated that one. That's because it was kind of like the spinoff. Yeah, it's not one of the numbered ones, yeah. But it's okay. Yeah, it's five. And I actually I like the first one still best, but it's real close for me because it was like kind of him messing with powers that he got from this phenomenon and
not Micah.
Not Mika. No, this was actually, and another thing I liked about it was a Latino guy, and you don't see those a lot in horror films. Yeah. Like he's like messing with like his chihuahua, like holding it in suspension. So
have you seen 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6? Have you seen all 6?
Yeah. The last one was just so disappointing. I wanted to bash my head into
a wall. You would go 1, 5.
Yeah, I would not even bother. Well, the sixth one was supposed to offer us the answers. You know, we were finally supposed to see what Toby looked like. It was the ghost dimension is what it was called. Yeah. And it was supposed to finally reveal this. And I had it in my head. It was going to be so dope. And then it was so bad.
The second one, I really like the second one. The
second one was
I
like the first one, but I think the second was my favorite.
Yeah, the dog,
the pool, right?
Yeah, the pool, and then it had
all the sounds that the dog makes kills me every time.
So that's the Bridge Too Far moments. I know one of Amy's animals under attack.
Yes, I love it in comedy though. I love especially something if they look really fake. Yes,
slapstick
where
animals.
You can tell it's a stuffed animal, but they're acting like, oh god, I love that.
So Amy, what have you got for your number two?
Okay, so for my number two, I went with Grave Encounters.
All right.
Ooh, I have seen that. My God.
I saw it with you, Amy, I think.
Oh, yeah. We watched that together.
This might be a first. I've actually seen all these films.
All right. But it's you know, the subgenre in found footage with a condemned sanitarium / hospital. So it's got the creepy locale. You've got this news crew that's going, or not a news crew, it's a reality TV show crew that goes in.
Because what's the one that's on Discovery Channel that they
Ghost Hunters,
yeah. And so that's what they're trying to try and find a real ghost. And this,
but they don't expect to find anything, which I think is what makes it so fun. Because they go in, they've got this cocky psychic guy who's totally faking everything, and then when shit starts hitting the fan, he's the first one that wants out of the building, and it's just so good.
This I found this one to be fantastically claustrophobic. And this one, you know, another situation where you buy into the premise of why it's found footage and why it's shaky cam.
Right.
I think it's not, I wouldn't say it's original, but it's effective. I think that they do because I think there's been a number of the found footage ones where it's the, you know, the chasing
the
ghost.
I'm not sure if it was the first one of that type or not, actually. I'm not sure what the first one was. In relation to the Blair Witch one, though, that came before, that would be The Last Broadcast. That one slightly,
I don't know that I've seen
it was
that.
Quite a bit slower.
Okay.
I didn't like the acting in it, but it did beat out Blair Witch slightly.
And Grave Encounters also plays significantly, much like Paranormal. It plays with time a lot, where they're like, oh my gosh, we need to get out of here in 2 hours, and then 24 hours has gone by.
And rotten food and things like that, and
that was...
Love that element.
Grave Encounters was really solid.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like the acting. I follow the main actor on Facebook.
who is that?
Who doesn't? Who doesn't? Come on. Everybody follows that guy.
Does that guy have a name? Do we have an actor?
Not off the top of my head, I'm sorry.
IMDb, that one. IMDb is your friend.
His name is Lance in the movie, but...
Lance, we love you. Good work. Good work on Grave Encounters. Good work.
Okay, Campbell, you're number two.
My number two is the 2012 found footage film called Chernobyl Diaries.
Oh,
this is the American disaster horror film that also involves the guy who did a lot of the stuff with Paranormal Activity. Mm-hmm. It's basically
was it a Blumhouse movie?
I don't know if it is a Blumhouse movie, but this involves a group of friends who are maybe a little too pretty and a little too wealthy, who are touring through Europe, and on their way to Moscow, one of the friends has the brainy idea of participating in an extreme tour and going a little bit off the beaten path. Unbeknownst to his friends, he's already connected up with some questionable Russian folks, and they decide to do a tour of one of the small towns that sits in the shadow of Chernobyl. The film is not super great, but I did like it in that it was at least the initial premise was somewhat believable, because they were sort of these kind of ne'er-do-well, you know, pretty college, you know,
entitled
teens who would be the ones that would dream up, you know, something like going to Chernobyl just to be able to say they went to Chernobyl, be damned, you know, the possible medical side effects from going to Chernobyl.
What could possibly go wrong?
I also felt it was kind of like the character that plays the sort of the sleazy mafia Russian tour guide.
Do you have a tracksuit?
He had a tracksuit on. He's pretty believable. And here's the thing. You know, I know we talked about with Creep, you know, that was sort of a two-act play that took place in two pretty simple, you know, dwellings. This is this, like, massive and expansive area, and where they shot it is just incredible. It's this old, you know, Soviet housing, all these underground...
Did they go to the Ukraine to shoot this?
No. They did, yeah. They did. I can't remember exactly where. It's not shot in Chernobyl, but it's shot somewhere near some, you know, failed Soviet community. And so it's expansive. Like, the shots that they... And you can tell there's very little CGI, but the shots that they take, the interior film work that they do, it's pretty incredible. And, you know, everything that they show just reeks of sort of Soviet architecture, and so it's pretty cool.
Now, my impression was this kind of has a bit of Hills Have Eyes kind of a thing going to it.
It does have a little bit of a Hills Have Eyes kind of quality where it's obviously, as soon as they get there, they quickly discover that somebody is watching them, somebody is following them as they're on this tour. Things go, you know, horribly wrong. The thing with the end of the film, I will not spoil the end of the film, but I think this is one of these ones where you have to swallow a lot of disbelief very quickly, because it kind of goes off the rails, not really explained. It's somewhat of a non sequitur from the rest of the film. I bought it the first time I saw it, but I would be willing to bet that if I went back and watched it today, I would go, That's really hokey.
I was disappointed by Chernobyl Diaries. I saw the trailer for it, and at first I was like, oh, well, that's really tacky that they're doing this horror movie based on this horrible event. But then I saw, like Eric was saying, with the Hills Have Eyes sort of element, and I was kind of getting a Seventh Moon feel with kind of these creatures in the background. I was like, okay, I'm going to have to see it. It's shaky cam. It's got these creatures, whatever. So, but I was really disappointed by it. I didn't think it was scary, and I don't know. I had so much potential. Like you were saying, the sets were really good. The Russian actors that they got, they were really good.
Yeah,
they seemed authentic.
Yeah,
not too Boris and Natasha.
No.
Not at all. No, they actually. I don't know if they actually got a Russian or not. They seem kind of Russian.
<That's true. laughs> All right. No offense to our Russian listeners.
Yeah. Hello, Russia.
Especially the ones named Boris and Natasha.
We know that we have a few Russian fans out there.
Keep listening.
Yes.
And if you haven't seen it, go watch the Chernobyl Diaries.
Yeah. And just I would advise you not to go near Chernobyl.
Learn a little bit about your culture. Come on.
Okay. So speaking of horrible real events, my number two, because my previous number two was Creep.
Yep.
So I'm bumping this one to number two. It's the Ty West film from 2013. Did we collide?
We had two overlaps. this is a first. This is a first of all. First.
The Sacrament.
The Sacrament is awesome.
Yeah.
Well done.
It's a note for note recreation of the Jim Jones Massacre, swapping out Jim Jones for a guy named as the father.
The father.
And for those of you youngins not old enough to remember the Jim Jones Massacre or the Jonestown Massacre, The Jonestown Massacre was in 1978. There was a group of young hippies and actually attracted a lot of African Americans to a faith healer. He said he was a mind reader. Mm-hmm. He was a highly charismatic cultist, and he purchases
a bunch of property in Guyana.
Yeah, and so after getting chased out of California, they go to Guyana, and they took some people, a lot of young people against the wills of their parents. So there was essentially a lot of kidnapping.
Yep.
Eventually, they said a congressman went down there to check on Jonestown after hearing rumors that they were stockpiling weapons and drugs and that there were a number of people who, you know, that the families had lost touch with them. Turns out all those things were true.
Yep.
And then the congressman and his some journalists and their security team, while attempting to leave, got gunned down by Jim Jones and his wicked cronies.
Right.
And then realizing that the gig was up, Jones and the entire community of 900 people drank the Kool-Aid.
Yep.
So that's where the term drinking the Kool-Aid.
Drinking the Kool-Aid.
Means you're drinking poison, cyanide-filled Kool-Aid.
You know, the thing that's amazing to me about the sacrament, too, is that it was sort of note-for-note Jonestown Massacre, but that Ty West added some elements at the end of the film involving the father and involving the sister that the film crew goes down to film, who's involved with the cult, that made the whole thing even darker than you could have imagined. Then a bunch of people being duped by a faith healer, drinking poison, all killing themselves in this mass suicide pact. It took that, which is pretty awfully dark, and it made it even more dark.
Yeah, there was the moments, you know, it's a, like all Ty West films, it's a slow burner.
As far as Ty West goes, this is probably the one that is the fastest pace and has the most action to it, even though it is still largely a slow burn, because they very, very, very slowly pull back the layers, reveal that, in fact, all in paradise is not paradise.
Yeah, the first act is the journalists, and this is why they have the shaky cam. Mm-hmm. They're going to try and interview the father and find out what's up with this community, because they were invited by one of the protagonists' sisters says, "Come down. This is paradise.
Yep,
you guys will love this.
Yep,
and we've agreed that you can do interviews." And so they start going in, and then they start unraveling things that just don't seem a little right. Second act is things really, the unease ramps up in a hurry, and then the third act is get out of town before they kill you, because they are armed to the teeth, and that they are going to kill everybody off.
And things go like really off the rails really, really fast. And the last, what, like 15 minutes of the film are not only grisly, but it moves at just a crazy clip.
Right. And
it's a happy ending, though. Happy ending.
Kinda.
Sorta.
Kinda not.
For Mass Suicide Pact, happy ending.
Am I remembering correctly? Did he have a nice long speech in there?
Oh, yeah.
The father?
Yes.
Yeah, he had several nice long speeches. Because the first one is actually, I mean, I think we talked about this when we first saw it. Mm-hmm. The father, the actor that plays the father, should have gotten an Academy Award for either, like, best actor or best supporting actor. Because the whole premise of his first speech is they go and interview him. He agrees to do an interview in front of his flock.
Right.
And he basically makes a mockery out of these two reporters from Vice Magazine who are trying to make a mockery out of him. He kind of, you know, paints them as the charlatans.
And he is...
And a really interesting twist.
Almost in a Trumpian way.
In a Trumpian kind of way. But then he gives another great speech at the very end, before something happens.
There's another one called The Apocalypse Cult that was very similar. Mm-hmm. And I tend to get those mixed up. And I think there was a VHS that also involved a cult. One of the
there
shorts.
Is a VHS. VHS 2. It involves a cult in Thailand. Yeah. And it's a documentary film crew going to visit a cult. And that is, I think we talked about that on one of the previous episodes of the Scariest Things podcast, because that is one of the most hair-raising and insane.
It was pretty messed up.
I've ever seen.
what is this again?
VHS 2.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So, all right. Yeah, so that covers that's two of ours that
I know, sort of so much overlap. I got nothing left.
It's a smaller genre.
Yeah. It is a smaller genre. Although I got nothing left.
Something I think if something like The Sacrament catches your attention, something to pay attention to is the movie The Endless, which was a huge hit on the independent tour last year.
Yep.
Is coming out this next month, and it's gotten rave reviews. It's weird.
Looks a lot like it.
Yeah, it does look like, but it's
but
not
with a circle
like,
theme, a circle motif.
Yeah, but this one's like more supernatural kinds of things
and
that
possibly
are
space aliens. Yes. And we all gave our hot take on this film at thescariestthings.com.
One T.
So if you want our hot take on The Endless, go check to that out. Scariest Things.
So Amy, so you got
the
next the
floor.
And that would be the only Godzilla worth. Okay, the best Godzilla movie, the one that I always wanted, Cloverfield.
Yay! It was also on my list, but I ceded this one to Amy. Because I figured I wasn't going to collide with Mike.
Right. And we collided all over the place.
Right.
So, Cloverfield is giant monster attacking New York. You've got your main character who's about to go away to Japan, but he went away a little too slowly. And now he's got to rescue his chick from a fallen over building in New York.
And I think this is the case of the found footage movie with a big budget director.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And mm-hmm. You know, it's like the fact that he's editing in the destruction of New York in a not too long after 9/11 kind of a moment,
mm-hmm.
that you see this something that's rampaging through the city, but from a first person point of view, where you get a glimpse of a leg. Or you see an explosion and you hear a roar, and the whole sequence on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Right.
Crazy cool.
Yeah.
That was...
You don't even know what's going on. There's people, there's screaming, there's movement.
Yeah. And it happens, you know, that it's from the perspective of a panicking public. It's like you... This is Godzilla from the screaming hordes running from Tokyo moment.
Yes.
And that is something that I never knew I wanted so much. And that was... I really dug Cloverfield. Now, I guess it begs the question... Right.
Okay.
This Cloverfield universe. That
there are no sequels. No, there are no sequels. It's very, you know, it's too bad because I mean it would have been neat to have seen other stories in that situation.
I don't know what's up with the why.
No, that's a
like,
damn
it's like
shame.
It's like are they trying to anthologize?
Anthologize.
John Goodman as a shut-in pervert, I could have lived without my entire fucking life. So those do not exist.
Yeah, I think based on your reaction to it, I have yet to see.
I had five Facebook posts after I went and saw
now,
that movie.
How are you with the end of? So not talking about the John Goodman.
Okay, but Cloverfield.
Second, but Clover, how are you with the end of Cloverfield? Because it got there was like about. Three or four points in Cloverfield where they could have ended it and gone, done, perfect. But they were like, no, we're just going to do like five more minutes.
Well, the director, Abrams, right?
Yeah, J.J. Abrams.
J.J. Abrams consulted with Steven Spielberg about how he should end it. He didn't know if he should show the monster or not.
Bad choice.
Yeah.
And really? I disagree.
Well,
consulting
with Steven Spielberg.
Oh. But I liked seeing the monster, and I liked the way he did it. I liked that it was, you know, somebody that we were close to that got that. I liked the end.
I think one of the other tried and true tropes, some alliteration for you, in found footage is...
Leave no one alive?
Well, no, that people find the footage after whoever was shooting it is dead, usually. It's not like, that's how they it's like, the idea is like, we went in the woods and we found the camera.
Right.
Or it's like, there's something, we went in and tapped into the security feed and this is what we saw.
Right.
You know, and so this is, so it's almost that you have to off the cameraman.
That's true.
To get the footage.
I guess that was my complaint with the film, is they could have off the camera, like... Mm-hmm. 85% of the film I love, but they could have offed the cameraman, like, and they should have offed the cameraman, like, several different times.
Well, he was the comic relief, and that movie needed it because it was intense.
But they could have like dropped him out of the sky. Done. They could have dropped him in Central Park. Done. They could have dropped they were just like, oh no, no, we're just going to do one more scene. And I just kept thinking, you've done too many one more scenes.
You should feel that way at all.
Wrap it up because it just doesn't need to keep going.
It, for me, it almost ended too soon because we never saw what happened to, I'm going to say Lily, I think her name is, the sister-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
She got into a helicopter and I was waiting to see if she made it out. So I was waiting for more endings. She might have been the only one that survived from that.
Yeah, I think she was.
She's in Cloverfield 4.
You mean Cloverfield 2? That would be great! I would love to see her again in Cloverfield 2.
All right, well, I think I've, because of my collisions with both Amy and Mike, I am now tapped out.
I'm tapping out.
So I think we're going to shift into our closing segment, which is...
Do you make any other sub things that you like in that genre, or?
Well, you can always return to it. Certain things like, but
because I'd love to give a shout out to REC.
Oh yeah.
/Quarantine, yeah. As Above, So Below, and Devil's Pass.
Yeah. REC. That's wonderful. Yes. And Return to
Boggy Creek. I want to give a shout out to the 1978 Bigfoot found footage.
Really, that was a
Return to Boggy Creek.
If you do watch Quarantine, watch the making of Quarantine because that is fun as crap. They actually built an apartment complex to use for the set, and they would do rehearsing all day long and only do one take at the end of the day so they get it all.
Wow!
So really impressive behind the scenes.
So for Quarantine, so the American version.
The American version, correct.
Yeah, I think we talked about Wreck when we talked about zombie movies. I think
correct. I think you brought up Wreck,
and that is one of my favorite found footage films.
That's the problem. I love so many in the genre. I had a really hard time.
Amy can go 20 deep in this world. I think I pretty much tapped out at this point.
Five deep.
Wreck or REC because it's REC for record, right?
The record button.
Do you prefer the Spanish one or the it's still the second one's good.
They're both good.
The English version.
Yeah, it's kind of like
what do you prefer, the Spanish version or the English version?
I prefer the Spanish version because I like the acting better, but I love what it says about the cultures that they have the difference of what's causing the outbreak.
I think
that says so much about the differences between the cultures.
Yeah.
Now remind me because the
rabies for us.
Right.
Yeah.
Supernatural for them.
Okay.
Demonic possession.
Right. Then that was the one that I remember. And the closing sequence with the night vision and you see the woman get dragged away.
Right.
Ah, that's great.
Oh, it was a great scene. Yeah, terrific. The sequel's also not really worth watching.
I didn't know there was a sequel.
There are four.
There's a whole lot of sequels.
There are four.
Well, yeah, the horror genre is lousy with sequels because you can do them for cheap and you can make a ton of money, so why not do another one?
Paranormal only has six.
Only six.
And Creep only has two so far.
REC3 is the, if you're going to do any of the sequels, that's the probably the most worthwhile. It's at a wedding.
Oh. Ooh, bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's kind of fun.
All right, so switching to our final segment.
Yes.
This is... in our second episode, we're going to do some grave digging. Tidbits of things that we wanted to, that we have been uncovering this week for all elements of the genre. So whether it's books or posters or short films, grindhouse, forgotten films.
Yes.
You name it. This is our chance just to do the grab bag and just say, hey, something that we think that you would find interesting to take back with you. What I'm going to lead with is something that aired last night. It's still on my recorder. I haven't gotten a chance to watch it yet, but a new TV show, The Terror, on AMC has been released, and it is a faithful reproduction of the Dan Simmons book, which is a not-so-faithful adaptation on the real-life Franklin expedition of 1846, where two of the United Kingdom's Royal Navy finest ships tried to find the Northwest Passage, found themselves frozen in, and they all died of of scurvy and froze to death. And
coming in at 1,100 pages is
not a doorstop of a book.
It is not a hot take.
It is a weighty it is a weighty tome. But this is your opportunity to see in a miniseries. It's a 10-episode miniseries started last night, produced by Ridley Scott, featuring a number of the Game of Thrones actors. If you're listening to this, you're probably a genre fan. You may recognize Mance Rayder is the Captain Franklin.
That's right. Yeah.
And it is so convincing looking. Anyways, something worth checking out. We've got a couple of posts for that on scariestthings.com.
Yeah, go to the website. Check it out.
Grave digging.
I found out this week that there is a 10th anniversary edition of the Leslie Vernon DVD.
Oh, nice.
Also, there are some comic books that are licensed. You can find that at vernonsfarmhouse.com.
Cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. My hot take for the week, my grave digging, unearthed that the guy who brought you Cabin Fever and the cannibalism film Green Inferno.
Eli Roth
is doing a children's film. A children's horror film of all things, starring Jack Black. It is a film called The House with a Clock in Its Walls. I have no idea when this thing's supposed to be released, but yeah, they teamed up and they did sort of a
Black and Eli Roth.
They
all
did
right.
sort of a Goosebump themed film for kids. So since this is scariestthings.com, the
one
podcast,
T.
one T, since this podcast, the whole premise of the podcast is your gateway to horror. What better gateway than Jack Black in a horror film with Eli Roth?
Get your kids into it young.
That's
right. Right. Indoctrinate.
One of us.
Indoctrinate.
One of us. Google gobble. One of us. Okay. So with that, that concludes episode 17. Can you believe it? We've made it this far, Mike?
I can't.
This has been awesome.
17 is a bunch.
Amy, thank you so much for coming by and sharing your shaky cam wisdom with us.
Thank you for inviting me. I have tons more if you want to have me on for a second found footage episode.
I think we could go deeper. I think we could go deeper in found footage.
I am banking that Amy is going to post her entire list on scariestthings.com.
Top 50.
I think she's past.
Are you up for the challenge?
I'm at about 50, so we can do. I could do it to 50. I might have to watch one or two.
Go 50. That would be impressive.
So I'm going to close you guys out with a one of the best taglines in the horror genre. This one comes from the 1985 film House. Ding dong, you're dead. Until next time. See you, everybody.